Hello and welcome to the Una Series podcast. My name is Katie. This is Boniface, co-founders of Una Series. I feel really honored today because Boniface has given me the floor to lead this conversation
just for once,
because I don't know much about this topic. So I am hoping to learn a lot with you alongside Boniface about the microbiome. So Boniface, with your knowledge, can you just share with me what is the microbiome?
I'm going to try and do my best.
Okay. So
what's important here is to start with, you've all heard this word now. You know, it's everywhere. It's even used in marketing.
True.
It's used absolutely everywhere. So what is it? Microbiome is just the world of microcellular entities that live inside, on, and around you. Mostly bacteria, but also viruses. Some we call parasites. They're all micro. You can't see them with your eyes, is what it really comes down to, but they're there and there's a lot of them. To give you an idea in the numbers, because that's always kind of interesting. Now, the numbers are all a bit all over the shop here. Some people say that, I'm going to talk about first us, so we're made of cells, I'm sure you know about that. And we are made of, some people say 40 trillion.
Wow.
And some 100 trillion. So I'm not too sure which one, I haven't counted them, so I'm going to have to trust one of those people. I haven't had the time to count them. But let's say 50 trillion cells.
Okay.
And you realize that there's at least twice as much of those microcellular entities that will fall into the microbiome. So basically, you could think of yourself as just being a vehicle, not just of your soul, but also of this little microorganism who living.
Carrying them everywhere.
Exactly. And they're using you to feed them.
Okay.
Think about it now. So this is where we're going to go with this. So I said in, on and around, because it's just everywhere, right?
Sure.
I'm pushing some viruses right now. I'm inhaling bacteria. I'm covered in Staphylococcus aureus. I mean, I'm constantly covered in this thing. If you could see them, it would freak out.
Wow.
But our immune system is incredible and just knows how to recognize them and makes the difference between what is me and what is not me, and everything that is not me, it will try and destroy.
Right.
But we also have, and this is where we come to this whole conversation, we have some bacteria, because think of it as the product of evolution. You know, we are the product of evolution. Well, that's if you not believe in the creation of, you know, the world in 7 days by a God sitting on a cloud. But if you don't believe that and you think that there has been a process of evolution, they were there before us. So
the microbiomes.
All those microcellular, life started really small. They were called archaeobacteria. So we're still not too sure exactly how it happened. We think it was this kind of big, really hot, stormy earth in this kind of water, and there was lots of different nutrients being bashed, and suddenly life managed to congregate, and boom, there was the first cellular activity that started. And then from that, fast forward, if you think about the time, 4.6 billion is the creation of the earth. 250 million years ago seems to be the creation of life. 45 million years were the dinosaurs' extinction. We are 100,000 years with kind of the first hominids, the first people with hands and feet, let's say. And we are 70,000 years ago as the sapiens. So we are very, you know, we're so little that history. So think about it. These entities have been there forever. So much so that if you take a human cell, a eukaryotic cell, you will find that the mitochondria, which is the little factory that will create energy in your cells, were actually a bacteria that our cells have phagocytated, means they ate and kept the little engine to make your energy from, as you know, maybe a bit of oxygen, a bit of sugar goes into this, turns around, and you get a bit of energy, and you get CO2 that you will breathe, and water they will breathe out as well. That's why when you breathe, you have some water on your bit of steamy.
So the microbiome is good.
Yeah, good question.
Can it be bad?
I'm just diversifying.
I like this. No, I want to.
No, the microbiome. So this is the thing. That you look at bacteria and some are great and most of them are great. This is the thing. Most of the bacteria are new, inside you, the ones that you have in all the plants and all those things that are alive around you are good. Only a very, very small amount will be pathogenic, will give you a disease. They will come inside you, and if they're not grabbed and destroyed quick enough by immune system, it will just colonize more and more and more. And it's just it's numbers thing, you know? We are constantly infected every single second by something, but your immune system just grabs it and destroys it and grabs it and destroys it and recognize this one. And it had already made a clone of like an army, let's say, ready for it. So it's just, it's a constant thing. But one day one comes in, you're a bit tired, your circulation's not too good, or you haven't ate well, or you drank too much, or whatever happened, your body, your metabolism's not really kind of flowing. Yep. And this one will just find a little spot, no one sees him, try and grows into numbers, and eventually kind of overpower the system, and that's when you fall ill. Coming back to the good stuff. So you have to imagine, it's quite difficult to imagine this, but think about your digestive system, especially once you've passed. So you go down through the esophagus, you go into your stomach, and that's a really acid little pouch that is so acid, it's 2 to 3 pH, it's crazy, crazy acid. And the first role here is to, in a way, kill a lot of the things that came through your mouth. Right? Sure. Secondly, there's a bit of pepsin, there's a few enzymes there, goes into your duodenum, and here you have a flow of enzymes coming in. You also have from the gallbladder, a bit of gall coming in. So this is a real kind of little engineering of all these enzymes. But then you enter through the jejunum, the long and incredible size that is going to be your small intestine, to put it really simply. Now this, and this is what's incredible for me, is just one layer of cells. So think about 50 microns would be half the size of a hair.
Okay.
And this is just, it's not a layer of cells, just one, all attached together by tight junction, a specific way of being together. And this is the size of two tennis courts next to one another. And here is going to be that little barrier through which you want nutrients to go through. Now, think about this. All of this here has bacteria, and it's all those bacteria. Some will work for you, and I'll come to this in a second, the positive microbiome, but some will also try and get through it. So you have, on the other side, 60% of your immune system. So think about it. 60% of your immune system is just on the other side of that wall that is the lining of your gut called epithelial cells. And 80% of its activity pretty much happens there, because this is the real entrance into your system. Okay. Now, think about the balance between your immune system there, your body, your inside, and here is the world of the microbiome, of your digestion, and what you've eaten. Now, these, let's say, bacteria will digest the food for them. So what happens here is this thing I was telling you before about commensal bacteria. You are going to feed those bacteria. Now, this is what I want everyone to get, because this is important. Bacteria eat fiber. If you give fibers to bacteria, they will take it in, digest it, feel really happy about it. Because they're happy, they'll give you MCT oil, medium chain fatty acid, that will be secreted naturally by them, coming closer to that barrier, and they will even have an incredible effect on activating your immune system. So in a way, they will protect you even further. They will activate T-regulating cells, T-killing cells. We go as far as thinking that there's some of them, some of those chemicals act a bit like chemotherapy. They will protect you from cancer even.
So can you tell me, there's obviously now, it obviously you've just established the microbiome has been here since the beginning of time, right?
Before,
we know this. You know, this is what you stated. But why now is the microbiome becoming such a prevalent conversation and we're starting to see this more? Is this due to more research? So,
this is a vast question. And in a way, it's a political question.
Sure.
So if you go back into the ancient society, not that long ago, before the food industry started, okay, before we started industrializing the idea of feeding people, and that's really 100 and 120 years, pretty much, right? Before people would eat locally, because there was no supply chain. No one would eat some bananas from Dominican Republic.
That's right.
It just didn't exist. We didn't have the transport facilities, but also no one had the idea. Remember, we could talk about sugar in a minute because the story of sugar is fascinating, but think about the very recent years, and I will put it there just for the sake of it, from the 1900s, really, but post-war is the crazy expansion of the food industry. We had this idea, the idea of society was we need to feed a lot of people because that was happening to the population. Before, we had a few wars killing people, but then there was not such big wars, and there's plenty of wars around us, but not such big on such big kind of world expansion. And it means that the number of people grew like that. We had to feed these people. Think, okay, we have to find a way, and the industrialization of agriculture started. Now, when we did that, even if it was with good intentions, and which I believe it was, we destroyed something that was fascinating, which is nature, right? Mm. That every cycle that you find in nature has a cycle. Everything is eaten by something else, by something else, by something else, from the poop of a cow to those bacteria that are eaten by another bigger bacteria that would then create a plant that means, you know this, it's called the food chain. And I give you a number that is, I've learned recently, that is incredible. Us humans can eat on this planet 300,000 different types of plants.
Okay.
The food industry in the last 70 years have reduced the fact that 75% of us humans eat three. Okay. So we have destroyed diversification. And if you like David Attenborough, if you like anyone who today speaks about climate change, about environment in general, but also about health.
Sure.
The key to it all of it, is biodiversity. The more life, the more different life there is, the healthier the whole life is. That's it's right. As simple as that. Coming back to your microbiome, you should have 100,000 of different strains of bacteria in your gut. They are different, and they are as different as animals are different, you know, as different as us. They're as different as a monkey is from an ant, right? Not even as they are so different. So we need to feed all of those. This is why we come back to the biodiversity of what you need to eat.
Which I think sometimes is really important to come back to the simplicity of things. Because I feel that now, you know, as time moves forward and humanity, we're running, you know, we're so clever. And there's so much that's, you know, being created and being pushed out to us, that sometimes it is coming back to these simple conversations of coming back to the root, back to nature, back to the soil, you know, back to our homeland where we are.
And but you said, why are we thinking, sorry, I struggled to answer your question.
No.
My mind went to another place.
Why now? Why is this coming out?
Because I think it was there all along. We didn't really knew it. Sure. Research obviously now is huge, and you have big companies like Seed, that is a great company. You do really amazing research about it. But also, we realized that we destroyed it. Mm. So this is why I was coming to this, is that this food industry, in a way, destroyed biodiversity, destroyed the way we were eating. And that has changed us. And we're starting to see, yes, we live longer. Yes, we see healthier. But not really. There was lots of dysfunctional things that were happening. People are so much more allergic. People are so much more sensitive to things. People have all these functional problems coming in. And this is
question. Yeah. Do you see a lot of this coming through your practice, your doors?
All the time. So I'm a big candidate for this as a therapist.
And what, obviously, I know this has been, I mean, you've shared so much information already right now. How did you learn all about this? Was this through your osteopathy studies, or is this beyond?
No, that came a bit later. I mean, it was a very thorough, holistic approach in the studying. That was, you know, and this was the blessing of approaching the idea of health and medicine this way, was that, okay, these are diseases, but also this is the dysfunctional world. And dysfunctional world is the world where people feel okay. They can go to work, they can carry on their life, but something's not quite right. And if I push it back, it's to, okay, what is being healthy? And I know we use that so much. It's everywhere on our website, because we deconstruct the idea of health this way.
Sure.
Are you physically, mentally, and socially well? Right? And this, if you can say, yes, I am, I'm saying, that's healthy. Who can claim that? It's nearly impossible, because first, there's such an array of different factors, but also because it is something that we don't really acknowledge as being part of the health process. And my point here is, in osteopathy, is that this is what we see. I don't see people dying. I don't see people who need heart surgery in a second, or, you know, a dissecting aorta. This is not, I don't save lives. I see people coming in that are functional. The proof is they walk through my door. So they're functioning.
Right.
But there is something not right. Could be a pain, could be a dysfunction, could be a problem with sleep, could be a problem with digestion. And most of the time they come with this one little thing that could be, I don't know, shoulder pain, neck pain, you name it, a bit of a migraine.
Else.
And as we unfold it.
You've done that with me quite a few times.
Yeah, and you find, you know,
it's
incredible.
Don't,
not, this is not your case, but, you know, yeah, I have issues with the passing water. I have issues, yeah, my sleep's not too good. Or I can't eat that anymore.
Yes.
Or, you know, some things have changed. And they're just not the same that they were at 20 or 25 or 30. And obviously, life takes its toll, and pressures changes. But it's all of that we need to piece together. And this world of functional, I guess, dysfunction, in a way, is what I see a lot. And that comes back into the microbiome. I realize that it's deregulation of the idea of biodiversity, and therefore our exposure to as many pieces of life that we can ingest, such as plants that I was mentioning,
sure,
means we feed a lot less of our bacteria. Because they are like us. They like to eat different things. So if I always eat the same thing, I'm just going to feed those, well, I have no idea, 3, 4, 10 strains of bacteria. Well, if I have an amazingly diverse, number one, two, seasonal. We live in a seasonal part of the world. We're not on the equator. So the things that grow at a certain time of the year is what you need to eat. And that is what's going to give you the best nutrients and strength and probably feed the bacteria that you need the most for that moment of the year. And I would push it to say, this is what's going to defend you the best to those viruses of that time. Again, it all works nicely together. Now we know a lot about the trees speaking together through the mycelia, the mushrooms. We know a lot about all the plants chatting with each other. But coming back to the microbiome, also each and every plant has a different microbiome on it, which means that when I eat that specific plant, I'm also ingesting its microbiome within it. You know, it's just like, so the more I'm mixing life, bits of life, the more I will feel better. But think about it. This is what's fascinating. The more I think that way,
right,
and I break the idea of monoculture, I come back to regenerative farming, or biodynamic farming, to name one that I think is probably the most efficient. And I've been taught by my wife all this.
And I did attend one of her clubhouses recently, which was very insightful. And she shared a lot of incredible information. And it was about an hour long. And I was doing my hair and my makeup listening to it the entire time. I didn't miss a beat. And, you know, it was taking you back to what you just said. You know, that is something that's very interesting right now. And something that I feel that, you know, needs to be spoken about more,
right,
more knowledge, more tools for people like me to start to understand how can we do that. But I think it then goes even bigger to the bigger companies and, you know, to really have those stops in place that biodynamic farming becomes a big part.
It will bring everything back together. And first, the idea of society. You know, this kind of farming needs people. You don't want machines, you don't want pesticides, you want to really reduce the impact of chemicals in it. So it's going to be natural. You basically based on about compost and some preparations with very specific times of years, the way you spray. But also it's people. So you bring back people into a place that we've taken them away from, which was, you know, countryside into cities. And we thought, oh, we're going to bring all these humans together and they're going to be so happy and mingling. And it's true. There's an immense power in those amazing cities that we live in, one of them in London. But
true.
At the same time, it'll be hard to say that this accumulation of human beings in one place has created a bigger sense of community. That is not true. We know now we can say it actually has created extreme loneliness. And these people live so close on top of another, but they don't know each other at all. Whereas you take the same in a community, that would be a rural community, and everyone will know each other, help each other. And it's
a very
different dynamic.
The connection's different, isn't it?
But mostly because the ground brings them together. Because you work together, the land, to provide for everyone else.
Right.
And suddenly, so you have to connect.
You feel at one with the soil in a different way.
And that's the connection. That's what pulls you together. But coming back to the microbiome for a second, I said biodiversity of things. It's true that you want to have as much plants-based, diverse numbers as you can, number one. We talked about quite a few times about the importance of the good fats in your diet. The last thing I want to say here that is interesting is because that really will speak to people, is the correlation with the unhealthy microbiome and the level of inflammation that we have. I just spoke before, if you remember, about how we had 60% of our immune system just there. Now, one thing that also happens is that there is a secretion of what we call mucin. Mucin is some kind of protein that is a bit mucousy, and that's its name, that protects the outside bit from the exposure of those bacteria to our immune system. Because at this point, our immune system doesn't know that these bacteria are bad.
Sure.
But it can't really see it because there's that big, thick layer of mucin here. If I don't feed my bacteria properly, because I don't give them fiber, they will starve. And when they start starving, they're going to eat what they can. And they're going to start slowly eating, grunging and nudging on this mucin. Mm-hmm. Eventually, they come quite close to this border. Now, these little fellows can see them. And they're like, hang on a minute. There's some people trying to come in. Not that I'm saying that that was the intent, but they were just trying to feed on whatever was left for them to eat. So they start reacting. They start secreting cytokines or those side effects that you have from the activation of the immune system. And that's a low-grade inflammation process that happens in your gut. It's not a massive infection, but that's weird. I'm always bloated. I feel lethargic. I'm ill all the time suddenly. Because think about it. We don't have a... The army is not infinite, right? If I have 60% of my army is there, ready, fighting in a way my own bacteria that should be my friends, this is the army that is already at work. So now, everywhere else in my body, here, they can't go and send people there. So once I'm now exposed, as I was saying, to so many things around me, there's less guys ready to fight. Sure. And it's a numbers game, I just said. So if you are exposed enough, eventually they will outnumber the rest of your army that's available to protect you.
Sure.
Funny enough, you have one or two, I don't know, you know, little infections. It could be, I don't know, bronchitis, could be the flu, could be, and you name it. The infection is irrelevant here. It's why has your immune system defend you so well all these days?
Why is it kicked in at that point?
And not at that point. So think about that. And the third thing I want to say about the microbiome, because there's something interesting about obviously what we eat, right? And the big thing here is sugar. So I'll talk about sugar for a second. Now we know it's kind of poisonous. We know it's not great. You know that if you take sugar in, your body wants to get rid of it. This is what really is. So if you think of it, it's a bit of an aggression. So I think about that a lot because in the French breakfast, let's just think about this. First of all, breakfast is breaking your fast, right? That's what it is. So you fasted during the night, unless you wake up to nibble on something. And the break of your fast, if you put sugar in, suddenly the sugar will, in terms of glucose, so I'm talking bread, I'm talking jam, I'm talking the usual things you get on a French
cereal,
breakfast.
Cereal, granola.
But that's fruits, a bit that's no. a bit better.
Okay.
It still is sugary, but it's a bit better. But I'm talking really the, you know, for example, you have a coffee and you're going to put real pure sugar in it,
okay.
Like that, or real kind of strawberry jam. Don't get me wrong, I love strawberry jam. Okay. This is just for the conversation. I'm not saying you should never eat strawberry jam again. I'm just saying.
Different time of day?
Exactly, okay. Later. But it comes in and it goes very quickly because it's in such a simple shape that it goes diversely, very quickly into your blood. Now your body wants to get rid of the sugar in your blood straight away. Boom, insulin is secreted. Try and pushes the sugar away. But also, this is sugar, it's difficult to stock. Some will be stocked a bit in your liver, but most of it, it takes a bit of energy to transform it into fat. So it's just going to burn it. And this is exactly what you see when you give sugar to a kid. They're like this. Why? Because their body's like, okay, all that fuel arrived, let's burn it. And they kind of put it all in.
Yep.
But there's nothing to do with it. So they're just like, So the kids are running around. Us as adults, we can contain ourselves a bit better, not always. Then we go up. And then after that,
slump, massive slump.
And that's something that, you know, we realize sugar, and I've just said that in this video for a second, this will never trickle all the way down to feed bacteria. And anyway, bacteria don't eat sugar, they fermented sugar. So it's even if it was in another shape of carbohydrate comes all the way there, most of it will be fermented, which means you'll have more gas, you'll have more irritation again of your linings. So my point is that there's something so simple about eating diversely, as many plants as you can. Seeds are good as well. And I'm not at all against the idea of, I'm against fish. It's true.
Okay.
And we haven't eaten fish for 4 years. Not because fish is amazing for us. We destroy this planet and you all have or should see Seaspiracy if you haven't. But Arizona, my wife took me on this journey quite, you know, we haven't eaten fish for 4 years and I love it. And I find that it's just, the solution here is simple. We should all on this planet stop eating fish for 5 to 10 years. Let the ocean do its thing, and after we could go back to fishing
it
properly.
Needs to regenerate, yeah.
But the way you can regulate it, I mean, if you again watch Seaspiracy, it is scary.
And everyone's
just kind of should see it.
Anyway, these documentaries and these, you know, studies and the way that people are packaging it up and sharing that out with the world, it's really important because, like the microbiome, like you said, it's been there forever, but now why are we hearing about it more? Because companies who really believe it and they have that passion, you know, and that purpose in their message being driven, they're packaging it in a way that's getting us to think ask these questions. But it's really interesting to hear from your perspective because this has been a part of your studies from the very beginning.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of questioning it and also, sadly, the idea of realizing how much lies around. And this is the thing about Seaspiracy. You know, there's a moment in this documentary and most documentaries, same with Cowspiracy, same with most of those alerting documentaries, you realize that you have big conglomerates that will hide the truth from people in a weird way because they don't obviously lie to your face. They just tweak the way. But also, they tweak the instrumentation. So you see this in this documentary. They said, oh, this is a good... It's unbelievable. And then when you challenge the people who do stamp, they're not there to be.
Absolutely.
They just disappear because it is just a big lie. But
give us some practical tools and pieces. I know you talk about, you know, the diet and, you know, the diversity in the diet, but give me something that I can really take away from me today and I can work on this week and putting into practice to focus on the microbiome and then maybe learning a little bit more about it as well.
I think at this point, all of us, we need a bit of supplements.
Okay.
So I know we talk about seed a lot because we believe that things have really, they are dedicating research to it and it's good research. And if you want to educate yourself about it, you go on Instagram, you do it. And it's quite, it's amazingly well done and it's so educational, but also it's fun and unique. It's worth it. So I think
they get to take a little quiz at the end.
Exactly.
Which was really, really empowering. You felt you really achieved it at the end of all your modules that you did. So everybody listening or watching Seed University, if you go onto their Instagram, you can participate in some of their modules. And it just gets you thinking in a different way.
Incredibly worth it. And then you can, if you want, subscribe to them and get, so you can take those supplements. And these are interesting because they're called symbiotics because it's, won't go into those details, but you have pre and probiotics. And they just managed to put them two together in a pill, which means that some of it will come. They won't be digested into your stomach, so they have a second layer in, and it will just kind of trickle down all the way where it has to be. So that's one thing.
Okay.
The second thing is, I think, to really realize that you need very good fat, which is long-chain and middle-chain fatty acid, because they're important for most of your metabolism. I won't go into details right now. As many greens and plants and seeds as you can. Think diversity, think local, and think seasonal, if you're in a seasonal part of the world. If you're in the equator, it's a bit different. These are the really simple things. Now, I just want to touch base. Sadly, we have to let go of fish, but we can have meat. And this is a really important one because meat that is raised properly, so a cow or a pig or a sheep that is part of those food chain I was talking to you about. So if you have a farm, let's say, and you will have rotation of your animals in multi-cultured little spots, because it has to be small, it has to be hedged, so you have the whole food chain and you have to move your animals around. You will have such a regeneration of the soil, such a diversity, and they are taking part through eating, through walking differently, each of them on the ground, through the manure, and all that increases the potentiality of it. And they are part of that cycle. Now, if they are raised this way, and you have to change this bad idea, people say, oh yeah, but cows fart and burp a lot, and this is why there's so much CH4, and they create more, they contribute to climate warming. It's wrong. If you take one of those animals and you put them on the grass, it all comes down straight into the floor, which is good. This is where you want it to be because it empowers the soil again. If you put those on a concrete floor, eating the wrong food, which is usually soya beans, which they're not meant to eat, they're meant to graze on grass. Just for the saying that these soya beans come from the deforestation of Amazonia that we've destroyed to grow this, to feed those cows wrongly, with now fart like machines on places that won't absorb the CH4, so it goes in the atmosphere. Yes, this is true. Especially when you put 200,000 in a row next to one another in the worst conditions ever. And now this is it. So I think this is, you have to really pick your information well. In this environment, do they, in a way, play a role in climate change? Yes, they do. Take them out of this, put them in the proper environment where they're meant to be, and they do the reverse effect. They actually contribute to the climate change in the right way, in bringing it back to the right place. So if you think about...
And I hope a lot of biodynamic farms, you know, the farmers start to be empowered in, you know, their practices, because this is really important for them to be supported.
And permaculture and anything, and because biodynamic is something we're very close to, it's very close to our hearts, but also any regenerative farming is important to take on, because this is what it's all about.
Right.
And I think, anyway, coming back to meat, if you are really thorough in the research you're doing to find meat that is part of that cycle, I think it's absolutely okay to eat meat this way. Now, we can talk a bit later about the idea of, are we carnivorous or are we not? Because we're not. And why is that?
This will be a good conversation.
But it's interesting. So this is, meat for me is, so it's scarce. We don't eat it so much, and it is sourced properly. And We're making sure of that. So it comes from a biodynamic farm most of the time, at least it's organic and free range. You want to make sure that it's had a good life, that it was killed properly, and also that it contributed as it should in a natural way to the whole process of the regeneration of life, I should say.
Yes.
And if that's the case, you can add a few other things that are potent. So we have kefir, for example. Right. We have apple cider vinegar with the mare. We have good things for, amazing things actually, for anti-inflammation, ginger, turmeric is the famous one, but curcumin is amazing. Mm. Curcumin. And in a way, this is interesting. It triggers some kind of anti-inflammatory by triggering inflammation first. So because it triggers inflammation in you, you have anti-inflammatory genes that are suddenly being triggered.
Yep.
So the long-term effect is an anti-inflammatory effect. But they are very, very good for you. And I think that's a good start.
I love that.
Okay,
I'm taking all those pieces away because I think it's useful and it's helpful because there's so much out there, right? There's so much information. But I think for me and, you know, for the viewers to start slowly, you know, and to just to ease our way into it, I think it's the end result will, you know, hopefully come in time because there's a lot of change that needs to happen.
And it's education.
And
I think we need to take your time. And I'm not saying this is all a big conspiracy and everyone wants to have you dead and they all manipulate you. It's not about that. It's about there's been a change of society with a good intent at the beginning that just swirled into something that just doesn't work in the way maybe people had thought it would. And I think I'm not at all against also all the idea of progress. There are many good things that are being thought of to try and help. And also we have to feed all these people. Like the increase of the population is mental. So we're going to have to do something about this as well and see how this is going to work. So I think we have to reincorporate the real idea of tradition and all the good thing that we learned as human beings, being observant of nature and being part of nature. And as we stepped away with this incredible like peak of progress and we just think, oh, now I can control everything, I can go to the moon, I can do this, therefore I can control nature. I think that was maybe the bias. And I understand why our brains did that because we became so incredible. Look where we are. We fly in the air. It's incredible.
We've achieved so much.
So now we have to step down, take progress and use it to reincorporate, I think, ancestral feelings and connections that we had before. And I think that's a way forward. Same for us. So keep educating yourself.
Yep.
Keep thinking, do I know why I'm doing this? Mm. Do I know why I'm eating this? Do I know why I'm exercising this? You know, educate yourself.
Do I know where it's come from?
Exactly. Just look at it.
Mr. Fantastic Microbiome.
Thank you so much. There's a lot here.
A lot here. Yes, but thank you.